Okay, welcome back, everyone. This public meeting of the Board of Trustees is now back in session. I trust that all the discussions were fruitful. Let's begin with summarizing our discussions. Each group will have 10 minutes to share their responses and to answer questions. Will the Integrity and Excellence Group now present your report to the attendees? Podium.
My name is Wojtek Hochko-Zajko. I'm the Dean of the Graduate College at the University of Illinois, and my colleague Terry Weaver from the College of Nursing at UIC. We were the facilitators. We're going to split this task. So the first item, the first summary, please, the next page.
Can we? Lost our screen.
We lost it. Could you advance the screen, please?
Thank you.
Thank you. So the question was, what principles or values reflect what we stand for with respect to a culture of excellence and integrity? The first point we made is that excellence is multidimensional. It's a relentless process that can be transformational, but it cannot be achieved at the expense of integrity. So we need to be excellent in many ways. It can transform the lives of the various stakeholders that we interact with, but we absolutely must not achieve this at the expense of integrity. We need to be cognizant of the principles of equity and inclusion and diversity when we think about excellence and integrity. We need to aspire to a culture of innovation. We need to have a tolerance for risk taking. We need to be aspirational and strive to be better, as well as to be self-critical in our dealings with respect to integrity and excellence. We need to have respect for the individual and civility. And in everything we do, we need to be transparent and aware of the impact of what we do. The second item.
And we thank President Meredith Eikenberry for his comments as we move through this process. We have number two, please. So we considered then what our different audiences, which in the bottom line was everybody. So as you can see, it was students and alumni, a very distinct group, but also parents and family. The entire university community, we started with thinking that this was just leadership and extended it to all citizens in the university community, and that not only do we expect this for ourselves on behalf of our state residents, but really going beyond that to a global perspective. We relate that this is part of our core mission of being a land-grant institution responsible for educating broadly the population of the state, and from that emanates our need to have integrity and excellence. We also extended this to our foundations, funding agencies, and donors. Of course, also other entities with whom we interact in business, such as industries, governing bodies, and then media and ranking agencies and peers as well. Next, please. So, of course, this brings this all home as to what should be our overall agenda of this issue, and we had some phenomenal ideas. But we thought that paramount was listening, defining, assessing, and communicating incessantly, as well as educating and holding accountable all those in the university community and with whom we interact in the previous question. That in creating a culture of excellence and integrity, it entails numerous different approaches, including honor codes, codes of conduct, training, use of social media, and better support for research and scholarship. And then how can we respond to incidents that reflect our values of integrity and excellence so that that integrity and excellence is reflected and not only how we respond, but also our ability to own failure. So it's how quickly we respond, the nature of the response, and that we take ownership. And that integrity should be infused in everything we do, that then ethics offices should be properly staffed, there should be curricula, and not only courses in ethics, but a thread throughout all our coursework, and not just standalone courses, and an ongoing assessment of standards of excellence. And of course, we start with a code of ethics from the beginning, and that financing higher education should drive how we define these. And then finally, next question, please. That's it? We did them all. We were very fast. I want to thank the members of our group. They worked diligently and well, and we had great discussion.
Are there any questions? Yeah, I was about to say, any questions for this group?
I have a question.
Where's my partner?
Driven by Stan's discussions earlier, and integrity and excellence are intertwined. It's clear from your, and yet there are different levels of hardship or difficulty, and maybe it's easier to define lack of integrity than to define a step that is full of integrity because a judgment comes into play. I'm wondering if you thought about that. Maybe one way to formulate this is to start talking about how intertwined they really are up front.
We did acknowledge that they were very intertwined. I think that's reflected in one of our beginning statements,
yeah.
that you can't have one without the other. We also acknowledge that integrity and the value may have meanings to different of the stakeholder groups, and that therefore we have to consider that perspective, that there'd be differences in how we define that.
And excellence may be differentially defined at the various universities within the system that have different missions and different peers, and that's okay because there are different ways of defining excellence.
So you can have excellence. One example is given in athletics. You can get the best athlete, and that's excellent, but if you take shortcuts, it's at the sacrifice of integrity. And I think Trustee Smart, you wanted to.
I was just going to say that because even though they're intertwined, they can very much be at odds with one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. You can achieve in some cases, you know, whether it's your financial goal or your number of wins, and need to do some really low integrity things, or be not need to, but do some low integrity things to achieve that excellence, which. In my term, excellence includes being having integrity, but they can be at odds with each other, and I think it's something you have to constantly be aware of.
Thank you. I'd just like to add a comment of an overarching principle of everything we do. We set goals of all kinds of things, but what is overarching is integrity and excellence, you know, whether we're pursuing research dollars, whether we're pursuing diversity, whether we're pursuing athletic goals, excellence and integrity has to be the overarching descriptor and value that we hold it to.
I think everybody would, in our group, agreed with that.
Great.
And I think we started from that perspective. Thank you. Good job.
Okay, thank you. I would now ask the group on healthy relationships to come and share their thoughts and conclusions.
So if I could just say, the other facilitator, Amalia, it had to go early. So I was one of the two facilitators. I'll be here to answer questions, but we had one of our group members chosen to present the report.
Elected. So good afternoon, everyone. My name is Clark Stanford. I'm the Dean of the College of Dentistry here at the University of Illinois at Chicago. So it gives me great pleasure to the board to report what Group 2, we did a slightly different approach. We used a free association component where we had a series of different aspects brought up for each of the addressed issues, and then we did, in true Chicago style, we did a voting to come up with the top three. One of the things that's important is this is entitled healthy. So you have to step back and remember health is different than health care. Healthcare is actually defined as the aspect that you already have a state of disease. You already have a state of breakdown and a lack of communication and a lack of the applications of prevention. So there was a focus here to actually think carefully about the aspects of how to create a healthy campus and inter-campus communication with the idea that we don't have to deal with pathology, we deal with a healthy, living, and viable community that actually creates the best of the academy. So therefore, the first, and each of the groups, there were actually very detailed lists. There's actually quite a few additional comments that we came up with, but these were the top that were actually scored by the entire community in our deliberations. So the first is the principle of values that reflect where we stand in terms of the relationship of how we working both within campus and between campuses. It was felt very strongly number one was actually respect. Now, if you think about that, respect is actually is a mutual respect, it's self-respect, it's self, and it's also respect for the ability to have difficult and critical conversations where you respect the ability that you can disagree, but you can still not come to consensus, but necessarily, but you come to a place of mutual understanding of the position each party has. The second one then built intimately into that is the concept of trust. If you cannot have trust, you cannot have respect. If you cannot have trust, and you lose that trust, you are going to have the inability to be able to have the third component, and that is the balance of being able to freely associate your speech in terms of your comments and your ideas without creating harm. Because the lack of trust inherently means you're automatically creating a pathology and you no longer have a healthy environment, which is exactly what the goal is here. So it is trust. It's the ability of trust built through transparency, and then balancing that with the issues that we want in the academy, and that is the freedom to be able to state ethical and moral principles with vigor and balanced with the ability to have the responsibility to not create harm of others and be self-respectful for the entirety of the concepts and opinions of the academy. The second issue was what are the different audiences? As Dr. Weaver said, everyone. It was interesting. We had a whole variety, all of the same exact list that Dr. Weaver listed. I found it interesting. The top rank, though, were a relatively internal view. Now, the board can take this in different ways. The top ranked was students, of course. Faculty and staff that should appeal to these ability to have a healthy communication, and then campus leaders, you folks, as well as the other faculty and the administrators, the chancellors and the provost. I think it's important that built within this is also the concept that we have to be a highly healthy, viable community to be respected by the external stakeholders. That is our philanthropy folks, our alumni, our community, our legislators, because if we are dysfunctional, we're not going to be able to achieve the first part, and that's respect, trust, and balancing the ability to have freedom of speech with responsibility of harm. The next one. And then the third is, what about the agenda and how to approach this? The biggest issue here that came up was this concept of the ability to incentivize structures, because human beings always, you know, basic economics, we respond to incentives. And this is this idea of creating a sense where the entire, the faculty, staff, and students, and the administrators are working together to a collective goal. And we can only do that where we actually show some component for incentivization for that behavior. A second important part that was brought up was this concept that, in fact, with the challenges in the history of what often goes on is the concepts of course, of restorative justice. And justice was held much as in the ethical principles of justice is where this was coming from, not just from a legal concept of justice. And the third, then, that we felt was very important was, in fact, this concept, as I mentioned where I started this is a conversation about health versus health care, and that the only way you maintain health is with a full concept of actually injecting prevention into day one, and that is interceding early on so every member of the university community actually understands how are the best practices for ability to communicate with self-respect, trust, and the verification of that ability to freely express your opinion in an environment where your opinion is respected by all. Thank you. Any questions?
Questions for this group.
Had to steal that and take that home with me.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I love this. Are you sure? Do you really have to?
Okay, would the sustainability group come forward and share your thoughts and your report?
Hi, I'm Cynthia Klein-Banai. I lead the Office of Sustainability at UIC. Go ahead to the next slide. Thank you for the opportunity to generate these ideas and look at something that maybe at first people would say, why look at financial and environmental sustainability under the same lens, so to speak. But I think that we had some very clear ideas of how important it is to keep these together. So what principles or values reflect and what we stand for in relationship to the issue of environmental and financial sustainability? First of all, we want to make decisions that are evidence-based or data-driven, and that would be comprehensive, not just fiscal data, but environmental impacts and perhaps even social impacts, looking at the three pieces of what is traditionally looked at for sustainability, triple bottom line, however you want to look at that. But of course, in preserving our institutions' fiscal sustainability as well, we have to maintain equitable access to the campuses, keeping in mind that we need to keep tuition in line. So how do we achieve these goals equitably? Recognizing the connectivity between fiscal and environmental sustainability decisions, especially as we look at the long term, making our decisions over the long term, we have to account for the environmental impacts that they may have, and being fiscally sound can also embrace that. It may mean perhaps a larger investment up front to see the savings later on. And that's a typical thing with energy efficiency. It could be done in other, in terms of capital investments, but we could also look at that in other areas. We also have to be adaptable to the disruption that we're likely to see, both from technology, perhaps social disruption as well as environmental disruption with things like climate change. How is that going to affect us? But also changes in research direction and different curricular changes. So we need to be posed to be adaptable and think about when we make an investment and how we can be prepared to utilize those assets in other ways in the future. Again, this last one really, I feel, ties back to the first, accountability and discipline. So we want to, really be able to measure what we're doing and be transparent and show progress towards our goals in these areas.
I'm Ken Kriz. I'm the University Distinguished Professor of Public Administration at UIS. You see on the board here are responses for audiences, and let me say again, we also followed a voting rule. So we had a much longer list to start with. As one of our members said, it came down to all humans, current and future, as well as perhaps some non-humans also. But these are the ones we settled on after the voting procedure, and this was students and their families, both current and future, taxpayers more generally, faculty and staff, and then politicians. So really stressing that these were probably the ties that we want to prioritize to meet our immediate sustainability issues going forward. Next slide. Ooh, and this one got small, sorry. So then we talked about our overall agenda on the issue. So what came to the surface, I think it got the most votes of actually any of these responses, is the need to balance accessibility and affordability with financial sustainability. So again, this concept of access, allowing students access to the program while at the same time remaining financially viable. Protecting the quality and excellence of the values we provide to others. So the university as an example for our stakeholders and our audience, especially in the area of financial and environmental sustainability. And then a long-term vision, establishing and promoting a long-term vision and forward-looking thinking as we move into the future. And then finally, the need to measure what we're doing in order to be able to find the most effective, efficient, and sustainable programs. So that's it.
Certainly, we have some questions for the this group. I do. Did the business model of four-year college come up?
Yes, it did. At least in our group, we had a very strong discussion about the viability of the current model and whether it was something we needed to take a look at. Now, what I would caution, because this is part of the area where I do my research, is we need to fully understand that model, understand both what the opportunities are as well as the limitations before we even start to think about changes.
Did the juxtaposition of the public mission versus the private higher ed in this country come up at all?
Yeah. It did not come up in our group or on the short list of topics.
Sure. Questions?
I'm struck with the number of times sort of two words come together, right, in all of these presentations, actually, you know, accessibility and affordability, accountability and discipline, evidence-based and equitable, adaptability. I think sort of the overall rubric has been a culture of X and Y, and that X and Y seems to be morphing through each of the groups, actually, in an interesting way, and they're coupled. I'm just giving you my top of the head kind of sense that, but adaptability and flexibility also have come up multiple times, and I think that speaks to the business model. Mm-hmm. And you know, whether it's 3 years or 4 years or lifelong or whatever it is, there's a clear signal I think coming out that to be excellence and full of integrity, we have to be flexible and adaptable. Am I wrong in that sense?
Yeah, I'd agree that under adaptability, we talked about adapting our programs. Of course, the readings we had really touched on some innovations at other institutions that around curriculum, and we reflected on the fact that the demographics are not in our favor in the long run in terms of enrollment, so we need to think about enrolling, for instance, older students, lifelong learning.
And if I could say something about that, the adaptability we also saw as something which we could give to Illinois, to give to the audiences that we talked about, taxpayers, students, teaching them how to think in ways using evidence and using data to be able to analyze things and be open to potentially new models of doing things, not only in higher education, but in the areas, in the domain areas that we all teach in. So environmental sustainability, for example. How do we come up with a way to provide environmental leadership going forward that allows communities to be sustainable in the long run? So this is not only, you know, our mission internally, it's our mission externally, is to teach the type of concepts to people and communities and students that allow them to make these type of judgments on a daily basis.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks to all the working groups. And before we make any final comments, I'd like to ask our three invited speakers, Dr. Eikenberry, Dr. Malcolm, and Mr. Coleman, if you have any closing thoughts after your groups.
Why don't we make the last go first?
Not
fair. That sounds quite biblical.
That was my intent.
just a quick thing. I just want to make clear that we as the College Board stand ready to help and invest ourselves in alignment with your investments. I'm really excited by the prospects here. So I was thinking of one idea. I was thinking of Dr. Malcolm's proper call for the need to diversify the STEM pipeline. One area where that's most egregious is in computing science, where despite advances in other fields, it remains remarkably undiverse. The people who are working in engineering professions is actually shocking.
And the long-term implications of that is scary.
Scary, to put it mildly.
Because of every employer that you're going to base, every employer you have out here need people with computing.
Exactly. So, what happened to us is that in 2010, we found that we had an AP Computer Science A course, a Java, an advanced Java course. We gave the exam, and in 14 states in this union, not a single black person took the exam, and not a single Latino student took the exam in 2010. And so, one thing we have to admit to ourselves is we've been shaking a finger at young people, telling them that if they just learned to code, they'd be rich. And only Asian and white young men have really been answering that call at any scale, which is strange. And so we looked into it, and we decided to design a new invitation. In other words, rather than saying, learn the advanced grammar of a language that bores you, call that computer science, why not instead invite young people to solve a problem using data and computer science, whatever their own interest is, that is. And we called this AP Computer Science Principles. Like Dr. Malcolm suggested, this course has a project component. This is not merely an AP exam at the end, but a project. And we found immediately it went from 80-20 boys to girls to 70-30 within 2 years. We tripled the number of African Americans and Latinos doing advanced work in this field. I mention this to you because of another crisis we face. If we don't do something at the College Board due to this cruel law called economies of scale, the CSP course, this new course, will be available throughout cities, but it will not touch towns and smaller environments. And nonprofits, in my judgment, should not allow those economies of scale to constrain them lightly. We might be willing, if the university were interested, to collaborate so that we would try to make that kind of coursework available where it doesn't make sense economically for us, but it does make sense to make it available in rural areas, in much smaller places. Maybe together, for example, with this state civics requirement that the state allows now computer science to count for math, it allows, require civics. Can we create a world where young people feel they can strive to become masters of these codes, they can learn something about the Constitution, learn something about computing? And what I was thinking about for you guys, if we made those investments, that you might recruit them. In other words, that you might say, as the University of Illinois, we're interested in you. We're interested in you coming to Springfield, Chicago, we're interested in you. And I think, fascinatingly, by challenging young people to do something and then saying you're interested in what happens, you can move them to achieve more without costing yourselves more money, which I'm just trying to be very realistic about your financial constraints. But if that can bring in more students and bring in some economic strength to the university, deal with the fact that, you know, half the kids from Illinois go to other colleges, can this be an attractive proposition? I just want to say, whether that idea or another idea is helpful to you as you get started and build momentum, we're at the ready to help because you're a member of ours.
Thank you.
Can I piggyback?
Absolutely.
One of the real disadvantages of having a conversation with higher ed people is that we talk about higher ed and we don't draw on some of the things that we can learn from our K-12 colleagues. In K-12, there is this concept of culturally responsive pedagogy. And essentially what it says is that you situate the curriculum, the coursework, in a context that is basically meaningful to the student. And it also means that you start off with the notion that the student has assets, as opposed to just starting with the notion that the students may have deficits. Okay. The reason that I wanted to mention this is because I was at a poster session recently with a group of noise teachers, and there was this one poster that I just could not take my eyes off of, because it was focusing on teaching quantitative reasoning via the social justice data. Okay? You take the data from a city or what have you, and you actually have the students crunching the numbers to try to make sense of the data about that. It helps to explain some of the things that they see around them. That's a really powerful idea. And it's also the kind of questions that they are going to be asked to do as people who are employed. Exactly. Basically to take ambiguous stuff and make it make sense. And so I think that maybe what we need to do is to have more of these kind of bridging conversations, because all of these things actually interact. I can argue for diversity, equity, and inclusion until the cows come home, but quite frankly, I'm arguing about the same issues that these guys are arguing about. I'm just taking into account the people that you're going to have to educate over time look different from the people you educated 10 years ago. And that you've got to take into account how that can happen. And I will begin with an item of disclosure. As I indicated before, I serve on the Morgan State University Board of Regents. But I didn't tell you I chair the Finance and Facilities Committee. And so I worry about the budget all the time. And I know that you can't just raise tuition with the population that we are serving at an HBCU and expect that that's the way that you're going to be able to make ends meet. So you've got to think more about the kind of the full range of the portfolio that you're looking at. And I love the idea of sustainability, because one of the things that you do is you've got to get efficiencies out of what you already have. We just made a major set of investments around deferred maintenance, because quite frankly, if you don't keep going with what you have and try to get more efficiency out of your buildings, out of your energy systems, etc., a bad winter can take you out.
Right.
And so it's starting to think about the entire portfolio, and that includes things like, what are we doing to encourage innovation and entrepreneurship among the faculty and staff? Where is it? Are you self-funding seed money around innovation that might turn into something that you can get license fees or, yeah, I mean, there's thinking through the entire portfolio. Where are there opportunities? And I like to think of it as kind of turning water into wine. You can turn water into wine via grapes. You got to think differently. That means you've got to think longer term. You've got to, I know, you think I've lost my mind.
But you caught my interest.
You got to think a longer timeline. You got to think a sustainable structure. You got to think very differently about how this could actually work. Right now, we are talking about. I will take David to task with his conversation about 3-year degrees. The reason I take him to task is that right now, we're talking about students taking 5 and 6 years to finish 4-year degrees, and we're talking about some 4-year degrees that are not 4-year degrees. Engineering is not a 4-year degree program. Let's just be honest about that and just step up into that. It is not. And so the notion of really how do we gain time? How do we begin to think differently about the arrangements? That all relates to the accessibility and the affordability kinds of issues. And I just hope that one of the things that you might want to think about is that with the changes that are going on right now, as AI basically starts to really change the nature of work, one of the things that you might want to think about is how do you basically bring people who are going to be confronting that before they have to confront it back into the institution. Don't just think about 18-year-olds. Think about the 35-year-old who's going to basically seeing their whole lives change. If they're looking down the road, they're seeing this change. You can get different populations in. And I just think that we've just got to rethink the whole thing and stop nibbling around the edges. This is a transformative moment. And so in terms of thinking about transformative moments, we've got to think about everything.
Amen. I really like the juxtaposition of environmental and financial sustainability. I think there's, in a way, one could argue that's an unlikely marriage. In another way, it's a superb marriage in the sense that even though these are quite different sectors, arguably in many ways, we're beginning to understand that we're not going to be able to survive as an environment or have an environment that is survivable for human beings unless we start doing things differently. And I think we also must look at financial sustainability in exactly the same context. The challenges are, I think, different but very similar in terms of being willing to go back to some basic issues and rethinking process. It probably is not the 3-year degree, and engineering does take 5 years. So the issue is not so much time, but it is accessibility and the ability to move efficiently through the process. And I can't speak for the University of Illinois now, but during earlier years, we basically shut down in the summer in many respects. And students thought of their academic experience as, you know, from September to May. And it may continue to be that way for the majority of students, but finding ways to utilize both facilities more efficiently, to reduce the cost of students in terms of their residential costs. I think there is power in facilitating the learning process. So when I went to ACE in 96, one of the major issues confronting higher education at that point was the cost issue. And basically, we tried to explain patiently to the Congress and the media and others, there really wasn't a cost issue. It's just that there wasn't enough money in the system. That was the issue. And it isn't nearly as expensive as you think. And we basically pushed back on that issue and tried to hold it at bay. I just don't think, and I'm not speaking now to the University of Illinois, I think this is a national issue, that we need to look afresh at the urgency of the financial sustainability issue. So putting it with the environment, I think, has a lot to be said for it. I think the main message that we want to communicate in terms of excellence is that Illinois has available to the people of the state and the nation and the globe an opportunity for the highest quality of education that is available anywhere in the world, that it is first class, that it has the power to change lives of young people, it has the power to transform professions, it has the ability to spur the economy and reach across the society in a way that no other single institution in this state, I'm not talking about educational institution, I'm talking about government, business. there is no other social institution that has the reach and the power, particularly of the state's largest public university. I think finding a way to communicate that both internally and externally in ways that are meaningful to the citizens of the state and that speaks more to outcomes, the difference it will make in their lives than it does necessarily the processes that go on within the university.
Thank you. Those were all great. I talked to President Killeen a lot about my belief that U of I is the strongest institution in terms of impact in the state, and also my belief that every state can run a school somehow, some way. Doing it for your citizens in a cost-effective way and offering them the highest level education
that's the trick
that they can attain anywhere is what differentiates the great public institutions in this country, of which we are one and we should be the best one. And we have the ability to provide that to our citizens, and that's my goal as chair of this board. Tim, would you like to make some closing comments?
Which is hard, but let me just start with thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing us to utilize the board session and go into retreat, and thanks to every board member who participated clearly vigorously and, working with all of our colleagues. And thanks to everybody who came and participated, and the facilitators did a wonderful job. And I think we want to make a particular note of thanking our three external discussants who Stan, Shirley, and David. We have to invite you back and see whether this, this time of year, you see the caterpillars that turn into swallowtails and they go into a chrysalis mode actually first, and then they come out as swallowtails and they're beautiful and gorgeous. They live on dill, incidentally, so you have to plant dill to see this whole thing.
Can you turn water into swallowtail?
We would invite you back when the beautiful butterfly emerges in this transformative time. So please join me in giving a round of applause. Let me try and do a little summarizing, at least top of the head. I think you've given us a lot of food for thought, and everybody here has given us a lot of food for thought. In fact, it's an abundance of content and materials, ranging from what we do to avoid the hardships of embracing excellence and how we avoid complacency, to what Shirley talks about to be pro-civility and to totally rethink the model, which is quite a, and then David showed us how to rethink the model in very concrete ways. A lot of things came back to data-driven, evidence-driven thinking about how do you assess where you are, what your assets are, the role of the stakeholders, and so forth. And when you are data-driven, which I am in my research career, and you look at the data, it changes your worldview pretty quickly. You make observations of winds, and they're not the way they you thought they were going to be. It changes your whole model. So if we're going to be data-driven, we have to be bold, because there will be unexpected inflections in the way we go forward. And we have to be true to our roots, which are land-grant roots, which came back again and again and again. All the things that we talked about, I think. And then the intertwined nature of these three topics. And I don't know how we came up with the three, but they did work, Stan. They worked pretty well. The multidimensional, relentless commitment to integrity and excellence, and how you can't extract them, how that relates to equity and inclusion. And builds a culture where ethics have to be part of that. I think that has to be in our statements that come out of this. Excellence is differentially defined as well, so it's not the same in each place, and yet you can't separate them effectively. The pairing of respect and trust coming out in the healthy relationships was palpable, and I think it touched on your personal story, Shirley, but also the fact that we do leave people behind in this society. We can't do that. We can't afford doing that. So we have to have the settings and the approaches to make sure that trust and the self-trust and the self-respect, which was also brought, I think that should be part of our, and as our dental dean said, we can't create a pathology. Let's avoid creating pathologies, because we could easily do that if we took the wrong path. Thinking through the rewards and incentive structures, et cetera, and the prevention, early intervention. And on the sustainability, the triad came up of fiscal, environmental, and social. They are intertwined. If the planetary platform doesn't support human life, we're going to be out of business anyway. So we might as well work on that, as a number of other things. We've got the intellectual heft to work through some of those, what we call socio-technical challenges. And the social piece, which came out many times, but also in this term justice and what that means for society overall. Accountability, discipline, measurements, data setting are all part of this, whatever's taking place in this cocoon that leads to the butterfly. I think that's something we have to really think through. But I feel like this has been a success. I hope you agree, and an enjoyable one too. We've got content that is fresh, that we can try to now put into a form that can lead us in the direction of a statement. And it's going to be a bold, ambitious statement. I think that's where we need to go. Because getting back to our 29-year-old state senator who said in 1824, it's a well-established fact no nation has ever continued long in the enjoyment of civil and political freedom which was not both virtuous and enlightened. And that virtuousness and the enlightenment is what university like ours are all about, and that is the path to excellence. And we need to embrace it fully. So I'm not sure if that makes any sense. It does to my simple mind, but you'll all have versions of that. We want to come together now in working teams to help draft some of these materials into very short statements that we can all be proud of, and put on our masthead, and set our course to the next stage of evolution. So thanks again to our discussants. You set the stage really well. The working groups worked well. We have a lot of work to do. None of this is easy. We have to avoid complacency and have to recognize that this is hard, and it will be resource intensive. But we have assets, including our new student trustees, I might add, that are wonderful assets for an institution of this heft and capacity and capability. We also have, I think I've learned in the last few weeks in spades, we have the support of the political leadership of this state, bipartisan, comprehensive support, and we have a leadership position that I think we can take advantage of as we navigate into this into this future. So I'll stop there, but I look forward to all of your comments. Let the emails flow, reflections. Think about what you've heard, what you'd like to emphasize. And we'll try to, in the next 2 months, perhaps. And I would like to encourage the chair to maybe think about trustees who might be willing to actually get their pencils out and help us with drafting and redrafting as well. So this is a truly co-owned vehicle. But I think we're there. These are very fat caterpillars right now. And it's time to go into the next phase of their evolution. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those are my comments.
Thanks, Tim. I'd like to make sure that the trustees reach out to me and the president to be involved in drafting of these three areas. I'd like to invite any of the trustees to make any comments on today's session. Okay.
I guess I'd thank the number of people that traveled a long way to get here today, a lot of faculty deans, and we appreciate your input and your willingness to participate. Thank you.
I'll just add that I really do appreciate these sessions. You know, in order to be an innovative and cutting-edge institution, you know, to get the feedback from everyone is vital. And as trustees, you know, we're not down in the weeds, so to speak, and see everything. It's nice to meet the people who are down there and can give us a feel for what's going on and how we could help them. It's very valuable and very powerful, and I'm glad to be part of it.
The only comment Smart. I would have is I think next year we should start this with listing the 3 to 5 things that we did because of what we did today.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
I just want to say thank you for making this happen and for bringing in these great speakers for us. They were really inspiring.
I'd like to close with just a couple of thoughts. I mentioned earlier about, you know, every state can create an educational institution, but not every state can do it for their citizens with true excellence and offer their citizens a private level education for a public school cost. Very few institutions can do that, and we do that here, and we can do it even better. The other thing that has hit me since the last session last year, especially as I took on the chairmanship earlier this year, was last year we had a speaker who said something that just gnawed at me all year, which is he said the privates, meaning the private higher ed in this country, we all know who they are. Some of us went to some of their graduate schools, are winning. The privates are winning. You guys need to figure out what's wrong. Why are the privates winning? After the last year and the last 6 months, don't believe that. I do believe, if you look at U.S. News and World Report, the top 10 ranked schools in the U.S. by U.S. News will be private. I don't believe it, I know it. Not a single public institution will be in the quote-unquote U.S. News and World top 10. However, the total number of students that those top 10 schools graduate every year, I'm guessing is about the same number of students that our system graduates every year. My sister went to Williams College, not to pick on Williams. She went there 40 years ago. It was 500 students per class. It's 500 students per class today. Yes, Williams is ranked the number one liberal arts college in the United States. They're doing it for 500 kids a year. Is that winning? We have the resources, the scale, and the ability to deliver excellence in size. That's what our motto needs to be, excellence in size for the people. Not needs to be, but part of what we need to do is excellence in size for the citizens of Illinois. And as Dr. Eikenberry said, there's no other institution in the state of Illinois that can make the impact on our state that the University of Illinois system can do. The last thing I'll say is that I think one of the things that Mr. Coleman said was complacency is a, or maybe it was Dr. Eikenberry, I forget.
Stan.
Okay, complacency, complacency. I agree that is the number one concern that I have as chair. And I see it at those privates as well. They got huge endowments, this, that, complacency. I think, I know, and I can say this on behalf of the governor and the people of Illinois, this board of trustees will not stand for complacency. And if anything, our administration is grappling with the lack of complacency that this board will accept from year to year. And so I can commit to our citizens that the U of I will innovate, it will take advantage of its position, and notwithstanding the fact that public education faces significant funding challenges, the one thing we can learn from the, not the one thing, one of the many things, one of the things we can learn from the privates is their funding, is their fundraising, their alumni engagement. That's probably the number one thing that we fall down on compared to the privates. If we fix that, we can do so much more than small private institutions. And so we will not be complacent. We will strive for integrity and excellence. We will strive to foster healthy relationships. And we will strive for environmental and financial stability. Our financial stability, and this is probably, given my background and the administration knows this, one of my major areas of focus is to ensure our financial sustainability is to innovate in how we spend money and what we charge and why, and to look harder and harder at every dollar we spend, because the reality is nothing, and Chancellor Amoritas said this to me when I came on board and everyone was bristling at my focus on our finances. He said, nothing can happen without solid finances. So we have to have that third leg of environmental and financial sustainability. But last thing I want to emphasize again is we will not have complacency. With that, I'd like to thank everyone for coming. And I would ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, everyone.
I've got our computer science people.